out there on this July 20th. My name is Carl Ozhovsky, and you're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. I hope everyone out there is dealing with the heat okay. I know that I'm very happy that we now have a fan in the studio. I'm pointing it right at me. You can't see my hair flying in the wind created by this fan, but just imagine it for the length of the interview. On today's program, we're going to be speaking with Susan Vickery. Susan Vickery is the head of EARS, which is the Earth Animal Humane Education and Rescue Society, based out of Victoria, BC. And we're going to be speaking with her about the situation on the University of Victoria campus with the feral rabbit population there. There is a deadline, as Susan calls it, coming up, where the rabbits need to be taken away or killed. So we're going to be speaking with her about the history of the University of Victoria rabbits and what you can do to help them in their current situation. And we're going to hear all about that situation as well. In the meantime, of course, we got to get to some news. And the first piece of news actually isn't so much a piece of news, but it's an announcement. And I'm going to be making these announcements regularly each week from this point forward because I think it's important. You know, the Toronto Humane Society went through a lot of tumultuous times in the past year, and it's important now more than ever to show them our support and to show the animals that live there, at least temporarily, our support. So I'm going to be doing a little profile of an adoptable animal each week, and hopefully, even if this particular animal is not one that you can bring into your home, maybe there are others at the Humane Society that you can adopt, or you know people who may be able to adopt them. So the first animal we're going to talk about is Jamie. Jamie is a bird, a purebred cockatiel. He is gray, and he was found in the east end of Toronto. His little profile says, "Hello, my name is Jamie. I'm a young cockatiel. I came to the shelter as a stray in July when a nice woman found me shivering outside and brought me here. When I arrived, I was cold and weak. The shelter staff took excellent care of me and helped me to eat and get stronger. I'm a pretty friendly bird who is making progress being social. I'm looking for an experienced owner who can continue to work with me and keep an eye on my eating habits and weight. If you think you're the right home for me, please ask about me at the shelter. It's time to start my new life." So that's Jamie, gray cockatiel at the Toronto Humane Society. I do strongly encourage anyone out there who takes care of birds to look into it. And yeah, this is your chance. This is, as far as I know, the only bird that's at the Toronto Humane Society right now. So I imagine it's pretty lonely. Check it out. And if you can, if you have space in your home for an animal that's not a cockatiel, do head to the Toronto Humane Society website, torontohumanesociety.org, and see what you can offer. So we're going to do two news stories today, and they both relate to the Calgary Stampede. Obviously, the Stampede's been in the news a great deal the last couple weeks. A lot of animal deaths there. So we're going to have two stories that try and give the sort of cowboys side of things. And of course, I encourage you to listen to these critically, as you would normally, but especially given the circumstances that these are coming out of. The first article coming to us from the Calgary Herald, right in where the Calgary Stampede is held. The headline is, "Stampede Cowboys Defend Rodeo Way of Life." The Calgary Stampede's authentic cowboy set staged an unprecedented demonstration in the rodeo infield and stands Friday, defending their way of life amid a mounting animal death toll at the greatest outdoor show on Earth. About 30 women and their families in the stands at what's also dubbed the world's richest rodeo, along with a half a dozen cowboys in the infield, held homemade signs that read, quote, "We love animals and rodeo," during the singing of the national anthem to open Friday's show. The demonstration came after the Stampede marked its sixth horse death in the first 7 days of the 10-day event. A number of Stampede officials called, quote, "unusual and upsetting." Some of those who held up the signs say they wanted the crowds to know how much they care for the animals on whom they depend for their livelihood. Predictably, animal rights activists say the deaths are further evidence that animals shouldn't be used for entertainment. However, some involved in the sport are questioning whether the Stampede's big cash prizes play a role in the injuries and deaths of the animals at the competition in Calgary. Although it's hard to pinpoint why there have been more animal deaths in Calgary while other rodeos and chuckwagon competitions across the province have been relatively casualty-free, one stakeholder suggested competitors feel pressure to succeed with $2 million in prizes up for grabs. Quote, "The guys run hard at every race, but the drivers are really keyed up for Calgary," said Sandy Stafford, chairman of the Guy Wiedek Memorial Rodeo in High River. And for those who don't know, Guy Wiedek is the founder of the Calgary Stampede. quote, "It's the same as if you're playing for the Stanley Cup. You're more keyed up than in a league game." Stafford said he can't recall a horse being hurt at High River at the four-day rodeo in its 15 years. Only one horse came up lame in the chuck wagons this year. "It's a similar story at Grand Prairie's Stompede," said Jason Ungurian, arena director for the annual rodeo and chuck wagon races, who has been involved for 25 years. Quote, "We've had no injuries for years and years in the rodeo." "That's really good," he said. "We had one calf this year that strained its back leg. I didn't hear of any horses that died in the chuck wagons." Cowboys competing at the Calgary Stampede, however, say they love and care about their animals, but deaths and injuries are a part of rodeo life. And some of them wanted to make clear to the crowd at Friday's events, hence their signs. Quote, "I don't know if we went out to beat the other side. It's just to support our rodeo animals and lifestyle." Brittany Nordahl of Greeley, Colorado, whose husband Heath Ford is a bareback bronc rider, said of the demonstration. Quote, "These animals pay for our living and it pays our bills. There has been a lot of criticism and we want to show the positive side." Ungurian of the Grand Prairie Stompede said injuries and deaths can and do occur as easily on a ranch as they do at the Calgary Stampede. Quote, "It's a fact of life," he said. "Animals get hurt every day, and vets make their living looking after sick horses 24/7. It's not like the Stampede is the only reason. They'll get hurt if it's on 10 acres or 10,000 acres, from a gopher hole or running around playing." Stampede spokesman Doug Fraser said the loss of six horses is totally upsetting, but added three of the deaths have been from natural causes and two from fractures on the track. None were the result of crashes. Quote, "I don't know what it's attributed to," said Fraser. "I don't think it's because of the money. We do random testing for drugs on chuck wagon horses during the week, and the final four on Sunday undergo rigorous drug testing after the race." Quote, "We don't believe the horses are being in any way, shape, or form tampered with. Everything is above board." Sydney Assay of Powell, Wyoming, whose husband Kenan Assay is a bull rider, said, quote, "We love all our animals and we wouldn't do anything to hurt them." Quote, "The animals are really taken care of, but accidents happen sometimes," Assay added, noting her husband wasn't aware of the demonstration beforehand. "Critics don't know enough about it. They're looking at it from the outside and don't know how much we care." Most of the husbands informally interviewed in the Cowboys' dressing room said they either didn't know about the wives' protests or preferred not to discuss it. Quote, "We don't want to stoop to their level," one cowboy who declined to be identified said of the rodeo critics. "We'll just leave it alone," said another, shortly after tossing his sign on a chair when he entered the locker room after the opening ceremony. The next story coming from the Canadian Press. The headline is, "Chuck Wagon Racer Fears for His Sport as Animal Rights Advocates Decry Horse Deaths." A chuck wagon driver fears the demise of his sport in the face of more mounting pressure from animal rights groups and urbanites shocked at the deaths of horses at the Calgary Stampede. Six horses died in the first 9 days of the 10-day stampede, and four of them were chuck wagon horses. There were no reports of more deaths at the conclusion of the chuck wagon finals Sunday night. Quote, "It's an unusual number," admitted chuckwagon racer Ray Croteau of Bonnyville, Alberta. "For somebody to shut this sport down, if they shut it down right now, there's 700 horses here who will either go to slaughter or have to find a new home because we can't afford to keep them and feed them for the sake of keeping them. It's a business, but we treat them like our family." In total, two horses died of heart attacks, three were euthanized after various injuries, and the cause of death for one had yet to be determined pending a necropsy. Quote, "They were not associated with accidents on the track or mistreatment," said David Shellack, president and chairman of the Calgary Stampede Board. The rodeo culture is at loggerheads with a growing urban population. The Calgary Stampede is where those two elements collide, as the events bring both together under one roof for rodeo, chuck wagon races, concerts, midway rides, and an agricultural fair. Quote, "We are conscious of changes in the social norms," said Shellack, who is also a large animal veterinarian. "There's a gap between the understanding of urban and rural. There's 7,500 animals here on the park and 24-hour veterinary care. We are leaders in animal care," he said. Animal rights advocates erected homemade gravestones on the weekend across the road from the Stampede grounds, where about a dozen protesters handed out pamphlets Sunday. Quote, "After six horses dead, I suppose this is the 'we treat our animals like family' that we've been hearing so much about," said Jeremy Thomas. "These deaths are the very consequence of coercing animals into such high-risk activity." Some competitors and their families countered during Friday's rodeo performance by holding up pink signs that said, "We love animals and rodeo." The Stampede and other rodeos have changed rules and formats over the years to cater to the demographic squeamish about using animals for anything other than pets. Chuckwagon and the timed events of tie-down roping and steer wrestling are the lightning rods for criticism. The Cloverdale Rodeo in BC eliminated tie-down roping and steer wrestling a few years ago. Quote, "Our fundamental position is because most rodeo events are based on the animal's reaction to pain, fear, and stress, we'd like to see the rodeo end altogether, but of course that's not very practical," Vancouver Humane Society Executive Director Deborah Probert said Sunday. "The timed events, it's essential they get rid of them. We're particularly concerned about the calf roping and, at this point, the chuck wagon racing. We'd like to see them shut down altogether." Shellac says the Stampede has changed the rules of tie-down roping and steer wrestling in recent years to prevent injuries to the animals. He does not want to eliminate those events or chuckwagon from the rodeo's lineup. Quote, "This is a very unique and iconic event for us, and it separates us from all other venues and certainly makes us world-renowned," Shellac said. "Our fans are telling us that we should not be considered for sure." Probert says her organization has asked the Canadian Veterinary Medical Association to tell the Calgary Stampede to suspend chuckwagon racing. The letter was sent Thursday, and she says the CVMA has yet to respond. Quote, "I'm not going to speculate on what the CVMA is going to say, but I can tell you that we use horses for sport in a very responsible way," Shellac said. "To have the stance that animals should not be used in sport is way out on the edge." Corteau, a third-generation driver, says he's lost 3 horses in the last 2 years, but none prior to that during a decade of racing. He feels the tradition of rodeo and chuckwagon are under attack. Quote, "These sports are in jeopardy right now. It's depressing because horses built the world, regardless of what anyone thinks." Veteran driver Kelly Sutherland, who won his 11th Calgary Stampede title Sunday, doesn't believe chuckwagon racing will be shut down at the Stampede. Quote, "Don't tell me what you think the horse should do," the Grand Prairie Alberta native said. "You ask the horse. They told me tonight they wanted to be champions. We are in the West. We are built on cowboys and tradition in Calgary. Wagon racing is here to stay." The horses that pull his wagon are thoroughbreds who couldn't make it at the racetrack. Corteau says their lives would be shorter if they weren't purchased by chuckwagon drivers. Quote, "It is the cycle of life. Humans die every day," he explained. "These animals, for the most part, wouldn't be spared if they weren't chuckwagon racing. Their careers are done at the racetrack, and it's part of their industry to sell them for their owners, and we're the next guys in line." But animal rights activists don't accept the argument. Quote, "We think that saving the animals from the slaughterhouse by putting them in a show that puts them at risk of injury and death for our entertainment is not a valid reason to do that," Thomas said. The GMC Rangeland Derby offered a prize purse of $1.15 million over 10 days, but Corteau said he doesn't take risks with his horses for the money. Quote, "We don't push the ones that can't handle it," he said. "They can't talk, but the best horseman can tell as soon as you walk them out of the stall. Their mentality isn't the same, or if you can tell they are sore and not quite ready. Our horses get treated the best I can treat them, regardless if we're winning or losing." That, my friends, is the news for today. Lots to think about. The Calgary Stampede is now over, but the controversy is still raging, and hopefully it'll keep raging for a long time to come. You are listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Today we are speaking with Susan Vickery. Susan is the head of EARS, the Earth Animal Humane Education and Rescue Society, and we'll be speaking with her about the situation for feral rabbits on the University of Victoria campus when we come back. But for now, we're going to hear a track from the Unicorns. This is Inoculate the Innocuous. Welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Once again, that was the track Inoculate the Innocuous by the Unicorns. And I guess the title of that is a bit apropos for our next interview. Today I'm speaking with Susan Vickery. She is the head of the Earth Animal Humane Education and Rescue Society, or EARS, and she has been doing a lot of activism about the University of Victoria feral rabbits. I remember a few years back, a friend of mine decided to go to University of Victoria to take creative writing. And when she came back to visit, one of the things she told me was, "You would love this place. There's rabbits everywhere." And I've thought about it a lot since then. And in the last year, there's been a lot of stuff that's happened about the university trying to eliminate those rabbits. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. But first, I want to welcome Susan Vickery to the program. Susan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yes, good morning.
Susan, I wanted to start by asking you a question that we ask of all of our guests, which is, how did you get involved in animal issues in the first place?
Well, I've had a really strong affinity to animals all my life, and to nature, the whole natural world. So through the course of my life, I've done a lot of different things, but I've always come back to animal issues and working with animals because that's where my heart is. That's where my passion is.
And so was that something that you found as a child? Was there a particular sort of turning point or?
Yes. I think we're often discouraged to care the way that we do for other creatures, and we're encouraged in our society to go through and do very practical things in our lives. And so I did many practical things. I did an undergraduate degree at the university in archaeology and First Nations issues, and I followed that with a practical nursing degree. But whatever I was doing always left me feeling less than satisfied. Mm. And when I connected again with animals, that seemed to fill up my life. It seemed to be a place where I needed to be. So I guess when I was doing treaty negotiations, there was a point where I was walking home, had a very good job, doing quite important work, making good money, and I don't know, I connected again with these animals, and I knew that's where my joy was. So selfishly, I've been indulging my joy ever since, and working with animal issues.
I wanted to ask you about the Earth Animal Humane Education and Rescue Society. What is the Humane Education and Rescue Society, and how are you involved?
I'm the director and founder.
Okay.
I started back in 97 and became a registered charity in 2001. My concern was the treatment of farmed animals. I was becoming more aware as an individual about the treatment of those animals and changing my lifestyle and changing the things that I was doing. And I recognized with all the love that I had of animals, I was completely ignorant of the abuses that these animals were being treated with every day. So I formed this society. I thought, well, I'm going to do outreach. So I go to schools, and I speak at fall fairs, and I don't know, when I rescue abandoned farmed animals and bring them here. And I think a lot of my work is really just by example. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people in my community at once thought me strange, and now they start to understand the work that I'm doing, and they support it. So I think they're learning as well.
In the letter that's posted on the website related to the University of Victoria Rabbits, it says that the Earth Animal Humane Education and Rescue Society also operates a sanctuary.
Yes.
Yes.
I have a handful of chickens and about 60 rabbits here right now and some feral cats.
Okay.
I can only handle small animals.
Right.
I don't have the resources and I don't really have the room for a larger animal. Or I'd have elephants here, I'm sure.
And so what does a typical day look like at the sanctuary? I imagine it starts fairly early in the morning.
It starts with my rooster, yeah, and these days that's about 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So I ignore him for the first couple of hours. Then I hear, you know, other animals throwing dishes around, and, you know, obviously they're up.
Right.
So, yeah, a major part of running a sanctuary, or as you know, any kind of shelter, a big part of your day is about feeding and cleaning. And the joy of being around these animals and what they give to you. So, yes, a typical day is a long day. It starts early and ends late. And I do a lot of work on the computer. I live on an island with only a few thousand people. So that's my connection to the broader world, the bigger world, is through my computer and with my telephone.
Now, I want to turn our conversation over to the subject of the University of Victoria feral rabbit population. We talked on the phone briefly last night, and you mentioned that the history of the rabbits on the UVic campus dates as far back as 20 years. Can you take us back to 20 years ago and set the scene? What was happening back then, and were there rabbits on campus at that point?
Well, I remember being a student, and that was back in 1982. I was doing my first year, and it's the only year I did at the university. I actually didn't like the place. And I recall that there were a handful of rabbits around the periphery of the university campus. That's all. You didn't walk through to the cafeteria or over to another building and see rabbits everywhere. But I was aware that there were a few domestic rabbits that had been released on campus. Since then, it's become a regular dumping ground, unfortunately. These rabbits are there because of irresponsibility from pet owners and breeders who think that the university grounds is a perfect place to release their animals.
Can you tell us why it would be a perfect ground to leave these animals here and why they survive particularly well there?
I think it's just a large green space. You know, Victoria is developing. It's a small city, but it's a city nonetheless. And I think you find feral rabbit colonies. You find abandoned pet rabbits in any green space. So that could be our local park. That could be the university. Previously, it's been the hospital. You know, anywhere where people see green, they seem to think that that's going to provide adequately for their pets.
No.
And, of course, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's a very harsh life. It doesn't meet their needs. It doesn't protect them from dogs and mishap from mean-spirited people or being preyed upon by raptors or from disease, of course, and the elements.
Can you sort of set the scene for us about what life is like for rabbits on the UVic campus? Are they more or less tolerated by the people that go to the university? I know when my friend was doing her creative writing degree there, she seemed to quite enjoy them, but they are a feral population. So how would the feral rabbits be maybe a bit different than the domesticated rabbits? And how, yeah, what is life like for them out there?
It is rather harsh because the administration made the choice a number of years ago to minimize the rabbits' resources by keeping the ground very short, mowing very short, and cutting the lower branches off the trees. So they were trying to starve them out, essentially. They've been doing that for a number of years. I think they've done as well as they have because a lot of people do care for them. And a lot of people have been supplementing their diet with daily feeding, bringing carrots, apples, grains up on campus. They love them. Many of the students and faculty just adore those animals.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you know, like in any population, there's a number of people who don't either, and they just see them as pests. They see them as destructive animals, potentially diseased. I collected 50 rabbits back in December this past year, and they were all relatively healthy. The ones that weren't had recovered from injury, not disease. There was only one animal that we had to euthanize. Everybody else was very fit, and they weren't loaded with parasites at all. They didn't have mites or fleas. They were healthy animals. They were lean. They were hungry. And I thought to myself, yeah, these rabbits are managing their own population quite nicely. I mean, of course, many of them do die of disease and other complications. But the existing population on campus seems to me to be a very healthy sample.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, they're not wild animals. The Ministry of Environment chooses to call them wildlife because they don't know what to do with them. They're displaced animals. They're in a gray area. But the truth of it is they're very well habituated because they engage with students and staff all day long. They're more like pets than some of my animals here.
Yeah, I think, you know, when people hear the word feral, they imagine animals who obviously have had some kind of human contact, but have sort of reverted back to this wild state, you know. And I used to volunteer with feral cats, and a feral cat is not necessarily an animal that you want to get close to, and not necessarily an animal that will let you get close to them. So
absolutely not. I have 3 feral cats here. And I think there's like the first 12 weeks, that's your window.
Right.
Anything beyond 12 weeks of age, and you've got a wild animal with mm-hmm. tooth and claw. You know, you've got a dangerous animal in your hand. But
and
not so much with the rabbit.
Right. And so when we say feral rabbits, can you describe to us a bit about what that means, maybe?
Well, a domestic pet has been dumped off at the university campus and met up with one of the opposite sex, and they have babies. And those babies are regarded as feral rabbits. They're offspring of domestic animals.
Okay.
And, of course, they, in turn, if they survive, will have another generation of feral rabbits. Over time, you would see them reverting back to their original coloring.
Mm.
All colored rabbits are the product, say, of recessive genes. So when you get pet rabbits out there breeding randomly, they start to revert back to their dominant color, being gray and brown and black.
I wanted to rewind for a second and sort of ask for some context. Why rabbits? Why not cats or something like that? Like, why is this particular area in BC? Are there a lot of rabbit breeders? Or why do a lot of people have rabbits as pets? Or is it just an issue of, well, it started out as kind of a few, and then the population has grown to a sort of carrying capacity based on the surroundings?
I think they are the third most popular pet in North America.
Okay.
And so we know there's a lot of impulse buys around Christmas and Easter for, you know, with cute baby bunnies. I think what happens, people get them home, and they're not prepared for the kind of maintenance that they require, the fact that it costs just as much to care for them through a vet as any other animal. they think they can survive well in a cage, and they don't. Mm-hmm. They sit there rather lifeless and unhappy, so they're not entertaining. I think people get easily bored with them. Children do. They get tired of keeping them clean. So when they become sexually mature and they start fighting with their siblings or breeding, people unload them. People do abandon all kinds of animals. Mm-hmm. We know that. We know people abandon dogs and cats. But, you know, the SPCA shelters, a lot of animal shelters are in place. People notice a stray cat. People respond to a stray dog. When people see a stray rabbit, they think, oh, isn't that sweet? They associate it with a wild rabbit and somehow believe that this animal is doing just fine.
We need to take a very short break, Susan, to play a station ID and a tiny bit of music. But I would love it if you could stay on the line, and when we get back, I'd like to talk about, get away from some of the context that we've been talking about and talk really about what's happened in the last year or so around this situation, and specifically what's happening at the end of this month. So if you'd like to stick around, I would love to keep chatting.
Sounds good. Will do.
Okay. We're going to take a very short break here on Animal Voices. We are speaking with Susan Vickery. Susan Vickery is the director of the Earth Animal Humane Education and Rescue Society. It's a volunteer-operated registered animal welfare charity that she operates out of Victoria, BC. And we are talking about the University of Victoria feral rabbit population and the issues that they've faced in the past and that they're facing, especially at the end of this month. So do stick around on Animal Voices. We will be right back. Welcome back to Animal Voices on CAUT 89.5 FM. Today we are speaking with Susan Vickery. Susan is the director of the Earth Animal Humane Education and Rescue Society. And before the break, we were talking about the sort of history and context of the University of Victoria feral rabbit situation. And we're back now to talk about the current situation. Susan, welcome back to the program.
Yes, hello again.
I really heard about this issue about a year ago when it seemed as if the university administration, or there was some kind of stories floating around about the university administration wanting to poison the rabbits on the campus. Can you tell us about why this has kind of become an important issue in the past year?
Now, I don't know if there's any validity to them wanting to poison the rabbits. A lot of rumor mongering mm-hmm. has been going around, but certainly they've wanted to get rid of the rabbits for a number of years now. I believe that stems back to a 2003 plan, campus-wide plan, to expand and do a lot of development at the university. They're growing like any other institution. I think they want to invest, well, they are investing a lot of money in new buildings and new gardens, and they don't see a place for the rabbits there, so they want rid of them.
You mentioned that there is some plan in 2003. Did these expansion plans explicitly include eliminating the rabbit population?
I have not read anything directly to that effect, but then I'm not privy to a lot of the internal documents. But I am aware that they're putting quite a bit of money into landscaping and investing in certain gardens and areas, and they will be making larger buildings and taking out trees. And I think they've decided the rabbits are not in their best interest anymore. They've been a wonderful marketing tool for them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had them on their calendars. You know, come to UVic, come see the rabbits.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. And so do you feel like the university's sort of forgotten that aspect of it? I wanted to talk about this sort of tension between, well, the rabbits are kind of like a nice little attraction, and they do lend a unique aspect to the university that doesn't exist anywhere else, as far as I know. I don't know of any other university in Canada that boasts a particularly friendly bunny population.
Well, I believe that's why they want to keep 200 within the ring, the inner ring of the campus, 200 sterilized rabbits. And I think it's just very exploitive. They want to have their cake and eat it.
Hmm.
You know, they have no regard for these animals as sentient beings, as animals with their own interests or their own value. They've always been just something to use or discard. And so we're seeing both now. We're seeing their desire to have them killed, what they call culling, which is actually convenience killing. And they're also talking about keeping a small number of the population on campus. what are they, lawn ornaments?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very discouraging. I mean, my impression, and I think a lot of people's, is that you think of the university as a place of higher learning. You think that there are people of ideas there, people with values, like scholars,
mm-hmm.
and certainly students with opening their minds. You think of a progressive institution. But what people don't understand is that you're dealing with administration. And administration, they regard the university as a business. They're business people. And in this particular case, they're not progressive business people. They only see the bottom line. They're more like used car salesmen.
With this small population of 200 rabbits, can you give us a sense of how many rabbits would die apart from that 200? Like, what is the total population at this point, or estimated?
If they followed through with their plans alone, they would be killing probably 1,000-plus rabbits.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm looking at a population of, I'm guessing, 1,200, 1,400 max. I know a lot of people have put those numbers a lot higher, but I think the population we're looking at outside the ring is about 800 animals. And so perhaps there's several hundred more within the ring.
Tell me about jurisdiction here, because I'm wondering if this is sort of something that's legal. Is it because the University of Victoria owns this property that they can simply say, well, tough, you know, it's tough for the rabbits. It's nice and all that so many people love them, but we're going to do whatever we want because this is our land and there's not really anything anyone can do about it. Is there any other jurisdiction that could sort of step in? Like, could the Humane Society step in and say, no, this is unacceptable, or?
Well, unfortunately, the BC Ministry of Wildlife regards these abandoned pets as wildlife.
Hmm.
So they're using that definition of these animals to acquire consent for their killing. It's one of those standard practices that allows for ministries or trappers or hunters to get away with killing, where, you know, you can't just go out and shoot somebody's abandoned cat or dog. Is the university private property? I think the university is a combination of lands. I think some of it is private property, some of it is endowments, some of it is probably leased. But I think they are within their legal rights to do what they're doing. But then that can always be challenged, can't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with enough public opposition, and that's what we've always hoped for, you know, perhaps that would put enough pressure on the university to change its mind.
Now, I want to read a portion of the letter that's on your website. It says, on June 15th, 2010, we were invited by the University of Victoria to assist in the removal and rehoming of the feral rabbit population on campus. For those of you living far away, the university is located in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. We hold a possession permit from the BC Ministry of Environment, which allows for the capture, temporary holding, sterilization, and sanctuary placement or re-release of the UVic rabbits back to campus. This permit is valid until March 2015. Can you tell us a bit more about this possession permit? Are you and your sanctuary the only people who hold this permit? And does this permit give you special privileges to do this work that perhaps override the university's ability to do mass killing?
No, I am the only one holding a permit to date, to the best of my knowledge. And it's through my business, which is called Common Ground. I help agriculturalists resolve problems that they're having with wildlife to their crops and domestic animals. I teach them how to resolve those problems using humane tools rather than the traditional killing, trapping, poisoning, you know, mostly through exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for that permit back in March through my company, and it allows me to do all the things you just talked about, remove these animals. And because I have a registered sanctuary, it allows them to be placed here for the duration of their lives. All of this is with the consent of the property owner.
Mm.
That's how my permit reads. The property owner, in this case, is the University of Victoria. Yeah, so I can't freely arrive on campus one day and collect a beautiful handful of rabbits and bring them home.
Mm. So you need to coordinate with the university to collect any of the rabbits there, and otherwise, in an odd kind of way, these animals are the possession of the university.
Yes. So I'm squished between two bureaucracies. I've got the university on one side, and I've got the Ministry of Environment on the other. And that's way in and about between those two large institutions.
Hmm. The letter continues. It says, on June 21st, we responded back to the university with a detailed letter offering our ideas and plans to assist. We indicated that our resources were limited and stressed the need for support from the broader community if we were to accept the large numbers of rabbits from the campus. The university's long-term feral rabbit management plan was released to the public on June 28th. In summary, we have until the end of July 2010 to let the university know how many rabbits we can take. The remainder will be killed. So when we spoke last night on the phone, you said the end of July is the deadline for the rabbits. So what's going to happen at the end of this month? It says you have until the end of the month to let them know how many you can take. Is the end of this month actually the cutoff point where they will start doing this cull?
I don't know that they'll jump right into the cull. I'm really hoping that by the end of the month, if we can present to the university, show that there's a lot of community support, i.e. a lot of donation monies, that there's land available, that there's spay-neuter support, that we can take hundreds of animals, I think we're going to keep them busy trapping, and they'll be quite grateful that we're taking them off their hands. I'm hoping we can keep up that momentum and basically push that deadline further and further ahead. I'm hoping we catch all the rabbits. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that the community support is very generous. I really want people to come on board and help us with this, and it's really about dollars. We can't do much without the do-re-mi, but I believe if the community wants this to happen and they support it, we can get all those animals off campus and provide them with good homes.
And so is that the goal at this point, is to essentially just cut the losses with the university and say, we're not going to leave 200 rabbits here for you. We're going to try and relocate all of them if possible, because this is a sort of hostile environment.
I would like that. They may have intentions to keep those 200 in the inner ring. That's certainly their choice. It's not something that we can decide. Mm-hmm. I don't have that authority. But I'm hoping there will be no killing. I'm hoping. I'm hoping that the university will accommodate us and have some patience. You know, if we can keep our numbers high, if we can keep these animals moving off campus, that's my dream. That's what I'm hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be put in the position of saying these animals live and these animals die. It's a terrible place to be. I want them all. But that's entirely dependent on the community support.
It also says in this letter that the mass killing is not supported by the BC SPCA, and I imagine that there are plenty of other organizations. I mean, you know, the optics, as they say in media speak, the optics of this situation is obviously very bad for the university. I mean, nobody wants to be seen as a bunny killer. So I imagine that there is a great deal of community support, and you mentioned last night on the phone that there have been some pretty considerable donations made already.
Yes, I think we're up to about $14,000, which isn't too bad in 3 weeks. We've got 14 vets on board right now who are willing to do the surgeries pretty much at cost. And we had a wonderful, wonderful pledge from the Fur Bearer Defenders. They granted us $50,000 toward the Spay Neuter campaign.
Wow.
It's huge. And we've had some donations, let's say free lease of land for the interim, where we can relocate these animals. We need more. We're in need of acreage on Vancouver Island, preferably outside of Victoria area nearby, because we're going to need to recruit volunteers and keep the animals healthy and clean. And
mm-hmm.
You know, and that requires a larger population of people.
And so is the plan, I just want to make sure that myself and our listeners are sort of clear on the plan. Is the plan to sort of trap as many of the rabbits as possible, spay and neuter, and then have them live out their lives on some type of sanctuary land? Is there any sort of plans to sort of adopt them out on an individual basis to families or that sort of thing?
The ministry doesn't allow for adoption of wildlife. They don't want to set a precedent for wildlife going into the community and becoming family pets.
Mm.
However, all the babies born in captivity, and we're probably looking at a lot of pregnant females coming in, all of those babies born here or at one of the other locations are regarded again as pets. and we can adopt them out.
Okay, but
always a good home,
right?
And that's, I mean, the focus is the best interests of these animals.
And so, maybe at this point, some of our listeners are wondering, well, it sounds like you have, you know, you have money coming in, you have this permit, you have a bunch of things in place to allow you to do this work, but it sounds like the university doesn't want to, isn't really willing to give you the time to do the work. Can you understand why that is, or do you have a sense of why that is?
I can't really speak for, you know, the university, what their ideas are, what they believe or think, but I... You know, my impression and my dealings with them is they just have a very left brain approach to things. You know, they weren't interested in looking at non-lethal approaches. They explored them very superficially and abandoned them. I don't think they have the patience. They don't have the imagination. And I think that's what the BCSPCA said when they commented. They wished that the university had taken a more creative approach. I don't think these people are able to take a creative holistic approach. I don't think it's in their makeup. And it's unfortunate because, like I say, we sort of expect that, don't we, from a place of higher learning. We mm-hmm. think it's more progressive. In this case, it's not showing itself. So they have a problem and they want the problem fixed. You know, they're not interested in process. I believe that's the real issue. They don't understand process. They understand what's broken needs to get fixed. They don't see the value of a more integrated approach.
Susan, I want to make a brief announcement that was sent to me by Joanne Chang, and she is one of the organizers of a vegan bake sale to help with the Uvic Rabbit situation. It's happening at the 3G Vegetarian Restaurant at 3424 Canby Street, and it's happening Wednesday, July 28th. That's a week from tomorrow, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., and her call-out says emergency funds are desperately needed to spay and neuter 1,600 rabbits, so that's someone's estimate of the numbers there, 1,600 rabbits from the UVic campus. The rabbits will be relocated to safe sanctuaries to live out the rest of their lives. Rescuers can only save as many rabbits as they have money to spay, neuter, and transport. UVic has plans to kill any rabbits who are not rescued. She also says the money will stretch far. 3G, the vegetarian restaurant where the bake sale will be held, has graciously offered to donate 20% of the total dinner sales from that night to the Rabbit Fund. And a generous donor has also agreed to match up to $1,000 of the total sales made at the bake sale to that. So she's asking people to do as much as they can to promote the event, put a poster, tweet, blog, Facebook, and yell out of your window so that everyone knows about the bake sale. There's going to be lots of goodies for sale. Bring a friend or three to dine at 3G. And if you can't make the bake sale, please make a donation to www.earthanimalrights.org. That is your website. Can you tell us where we can find out more information about this situation and how people can help?
Yes, well, through the website, certainly. And I have a contact email on there as well. Okay. So any questions, any ideas, any volunteer support, please bring it on. So visit the website, earthanimalrights.org, and you can donate. You can see how the money will be used. I just started it. It's not as full as I would like it to be. I could certainly use a couple more pages in there, and they'll be coming up in the next few days.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily now, we are looking to build the pen, to provide for the animals, to give them the veterinary care that they need, and perhaps to acquire another sanctuary spot somewhere on the south of Vancouver Island.
And so what is your plan at this point? Is this a waiting game at this point to hear back from the university? Is there already things that are sort of being put in motion to trap and relocate any of the animals that are currently there? Are you waiting to find the land? What's happening right now, today?
I have some correspondence with Tom Smith. He's the project manager. He's also facilities management at the University of Victoria. And I got the impression that he was very encouraged by the progress that we had made and wanted to know how many rabbits we were going to be prepared to take immediately, and had intimated that they might be able to stagger the trapping so that we could keep ahead of the game as well, you know, with the spay and neuters and with actually removing them and housing them. It'd be pretty hard if we were just presented with hundreds and hundreds of rabbits, you know, August 1st. So I think he's starting to recognize that, and I believe that they're willing to accommodate us a little bit on that one. So, yes, I always like to look at the positive side of things. I think they are being helpful. I think they're recognizing that we're providing a solution and something that they can work with.
Susan, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Yes, well, thank you very much for having me.
It was no problem at all. It's an issue that I've been hearing about, at least rumblings about, for quite some time, and it sounds like it's become fairly dire in the past little while, and I'm really hoping that anyone who's listened to the show in the Toronto area will consider making a donation. This is a very concrete sort of issue that can be supported today, that will have effects right now. So
yes,
if you're someone who makes donations to charities and you never really know where your money's going or how or when it's going to be used, this is something that you can donate to right now, and you'll know exactly where it's going.
Absolutely, and any amount is wonderful. I mean, $10 buys a bag of feed. Think small, think big, it all works. And yes, and we're all volunteers, and we're looking at corporate sponsorship as well, so we're trying to get all our materials below cost. And yeah, everything goes to the rabbits.
Susan, thanks so much for being on the program, and
keep
me posted on how things progress, okay?
Will do.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We were just speaking with Susan Vickery. Susan is the head of the Earth Animal Humane Education and Rescue Society in Victoria, BC, and we were talking about the University of Victoria feral rabbit situation. You've been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM, and coming up next are Hot Jams. Stay tuned.